information. But there also doesn't seem to be any questioning of the idea that the penalty for stabbing or maybe attempting to stab someone is summary execution. Have reporters just become so inured to that that they leave it unchallenged?
It certainly seems that way. And of course, that's what we've seen in terms of the response from the Israeli security apparatus, whether it's the police or the military, in response to some of these incidents. And in many cases, what happens is a Palestinian is shot and killed, even at a time when they are not presenting any threat, when non-lethal force could be used to arrest them. And we've seen some of these incidents caught on video as well. We've also seen incidents where Palestinians who have already been subdued are then fired into additional times and essentially executed. This is, of course, very troubling, not only because it is an illegal extrajudicial assassination, but also because it speaks to the message that the Israeli government is trying to send to Palestinians, and it speaks to how they believe this problem is going to be solved. That only through the use of brute force, that only through the expression that any resistance will be met with the strongest possible repression will Palestinians get the message that this has to stop. Unfortunately, what we've seen is that the entrenchment of the occupation, the continuance of these policies, is only likely to continue to stoke the ire of Palestinians living under these oppressive systems.
Well, let me continue on that idea of what sends a message. A few weeks back, lots of folks thought that it was bizarre that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would claim that a Palestinian gave Hitler the idea of the Holocaust. But in a recent piece for The Nation, you say that outlandish claims like that actually also have a kind of message delivery purpose. Tell us a little about that.
Sure. Well, you know, what the Israeli Prime Minister did in essentially saying that Hitler didn't intend to exterminate the Jews until a Palestinian gave him the idea is problematic on so many levels, especially coming from an Israeli Prime Minister and the representative of the state which has often really condemned Holocaust revisionism. But it's part of something bigger as well. It's part of this attempt that Netanyahu has often made, and many others as well have made, to suggest that the reason that Palestinians behave the way that they do toward Israelis is because of a deep-seated, innate hatred of Jews, not because of the experience that they've had living under the jackboot of military occupation, not because of the experience of dispossession that took place when the State of Israel was created, when hundreds of thousands of refugees were forced from their homes, not because of any of that. Rather, what they want people to believe is that Palestinians, by virtue of who they are opposed to Jews. And the reason that they argue this is because they would like to continue policies of brute force. It's obviously a very racist analysis, an analysis that's very wrong as well, but it is a politically convenient analysis for those who do not want to end the military occupation, who do not want to come to a just and lasting peace agreement with Palestinians who, whether they like it or not, are going to be living on that land with Israelis for as long as time will allow. You know, I think it's a very dangerous narrative that the Israeli Prime Minister and many others are engaging in as well.
We've been speaking with Youssef Mouner. He's of the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. You can find them online at endtheoccupation.org. Youssef Mouner, thank you very much for joining us today on Counterspin.
You're very welcome.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. For more information about FAIR, you can check out our website. It's fair.org. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6:03, and next is Bread and Roses. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a dance party benefit for Safer Streets on Saturday, November 7th at 9 p.m. at Crush in Portland. Safer Streets offers free self-defense classes in various easily accessible locations for women in the Portland metro area who are experiencing homelessness, poverty, mental health or addiction issues, for sex workers, and for survivors of violence or abuse. Safer Streets is queer and trans friendly and welcomes and meets attendees at their particular needs or abilities. That's a dance party with DJ Aurora to benefit Safer Streets, Saturday, November 7th, 9 p.m. at Crush, 1400 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month is the amazing Nina Simone, showing Thursday, November 19th at 7 p.m. Nina Simone was one of America's true musical geniuses. With her unique signature mix of layering folk, gospel, classical, pop, and African music, along with a revolutionary vision of Black freedom, pride, and defiance. Again, that's the amazing and revolutionary Miss Nina Simone, showing as part of the We Real Cool film series on Thursday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs. I'm Mary Postlewaite, your host this evening, and our engineer will be Delphine Crescenzo. In studio, we have Marshalia Postlewaite and Olivia Aubrey. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists. We give voice to those working for social justice, equity, and equity globally and locally. We strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun. We always welcome new collective members, no experience necessary. Find out more about how you can host, produce, or engineer with us. You can contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator at volunteer@kboo.org. Make sure to like KBOO, Bread and Roses on Facebook to get updates and see behind-the-scenes photos. We're also on Twitter at Bread and Roses Radio and on the web at www.kboo.fm/breadandroses. Today, I want to talk about something scary. Happy Halloween, everybody. I say scary, meaning outside the box scary. We all know Halloween is about ghosts and goblins and ooh. But I want to talk about things that are scary to, you know, everyday life. Like the shootings that have been going on in the theaters and in the schools. Like the relationships that parents do not have with their children that leads to the shootings in the schools and pregnancy and things along those lines. And also, I want to talk about domestic violence. Those are the topics that I find scariest, so I chose those. So today I have my daughter, Marshalia, and my other, quote, daughter, Olivia, here, because I wanted you guys to hear the voices of our youth when it comes to the relationship that they feel they should have or that the children of nowadays can have with their parents. Marshalia, we'll start off with you. How has it impacted you hearing and seeing all of the things that are going on TV with the shootings and, you know, all the violence that goes on that we see every day when I watch the news. How does that impact you in your life? Or does it?
Well, it scares me because growing up where I grew up in what I know as the St. John's Woods, now the Cathedral Gardens, and growing up with a brother who is African-American and he's a darker skin complexion than me, it scares me just knowing that Elijah can walk out the house and one day not come back.
Be stereotyped.
Right. Be stereotyped as this thug, this this drug dealer, this monster that he's not. And then I can walk out into the world and be perfectly fine. You know, because they look at me and they see white. They don't see that color in me. And it just, it scares me and it frustrates me. And it makes me really sad that our world is coming to this. You know, like, we all bleed red. So. Right.
So what do you think that we as parents need to hear, or we as adults, not just parents, but adults in general, need to hear from somebody your age when it comes to things along those lines? When you see things like that happening in your neighborhood and kids getting hurt, or, you know, young adults getting hurt, what could you tell us as adults that you want us to know that where we can help you or make you feel comfortable as a younger adult?
Listen, I feel like that's the hardest thing for adults to do because they look at us, or in my own experiences, they've looked at me and they're like, oh, you're still just a kid. No, listen, because it starts at home. Like, kids give you signs all the time. Like, they just want that structure. They want that discipline. They want somebody to be like, hey, this is how it's going to be, and I'm not going to let you step that boundary. And they want that, and they call for it. And parents and adults just need to listen to those callings and really see that. Just open your eyes and stop being so...
adult?
Yeah.
Olivia.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, because you kind of grew up in the same neighborhood as Marshalia. When you see those things come on TV, the most recent shooting, and, you know, knowing that it's a young adult who is one of your peers. I mean, not saying your peer, but, you know, the your generation, right. You know, how does that make you feel? And what could you tell us adults out here that we would know, or what we could look for, you know, to maybe stop something like that in the future?
I just would say definitely keep an open mind, because looking at all ages, it starts from the little ones, because that's where we grow up. We're little, we're all little. And I'd say definitely look within your children and don't try to look at their actions and they're maybe feeling angry or sad. Just, I think we parents overthink things sometimes and blame themselves for a lot instead of just trying to understand your children and what they're thinking, because you guys have probably gone through what we're going through. So I think it's important to maybe put yourself in your child's position and thinking about what they might want and what they need in order to be successful.
Yeah. You know, I kind of, the last shooting in Springfield kind of, it got to me. You know, I have an older daughter who lives out there in Springfield. And, I can't stress enough, people, we are the adults, and every day of our children's lives, there are signs that they show us whether or not they're happy or they're sad or they're angry or whatever emotion they're feeling. And we as adults have a responsibility. We have a responsibility to look at our younger generation and to let them know that they're safe and that it's going to be okay. And if maybe more of us stood up and took a child by their hand, whether that's your child or somebody else's child, to take a child by the hand and show them that, you know, hey, it's going to be okay. Hey, you know, nobody's perfect and we all make mistakes. But I'm here for you and I got your back no matter what, you know, and that's my weekly challenge, is for us adults out there to, you know, go to one of the younger adults around you and say, hey, you know what? I got you. I got your back and it's okay. You know, let's talk about this. Let's do it. I challenge all parents out there to talk to their kids about these things. These things should not be swept under the carpet. They need to be brought out. If, you know, if we continue to not talk to our children about life in general, we're going to have more teenage suicide, more teenage pregnancy. We're going to have broken homes. We're going to have drug addicts, and we're going to have jail members, and we're going to have dead children. And that's the way it is. You know, I can't stress enough how it's hard. I feel like I can speak about it. I was a teenage mother. You know, I lived in a family where there was drug abuse and alcoholism. And, you know, I had the feelings that I felt like I wasn't loved enough and that I didn't have the things that I needed emotionally. So I've kind of made it my path to show the next younger generation that I'm there. I don't have to have a whole lot of money. I don't have to go a lot of places. All I have to do is look at them and tell them that, you know, I'm here and I care about you. And that's all they need. They're wanting that. Our younger generation needs that from us, people. They need us. They need us to tell them that it's okay. They need us to tell them when they're doing wrong. They need us to tell them that no matter what, you can hear them. And not just hear what they say, but listen to what they're telling you. That is my challenge for you this week. I'm sorry, Olivia's over here crying. She's my baby. How are you feeling right now, Olivia?
It's hard to think about so many kids, especially the little ones, just going through what an adult might go through, what mm-hmm. they just shouldn't be going through. And it's just heartbreaking because my family's going through so much mm-hmm. and it's just hitting home so much. And it's just hard to think about so many people, even in my family, that don't help. Mm-hmm. And there's so many good people out there that do help me that aren't family. And it's just, I just want to make sure people out there know that there's people wanting help, and you just have to give it to the right people, and it doesn't have to be a whole lot. Just coming from the heart, you know?
I love you, baby. I love you lots. And she's right, folks. It doesn't have to be your own child. It doesn't have to be the neighbor's child. Mm-hmm. Just some child that you see that might need a hug or a hand or just, hey, I got you. That's all it takes. You heard it from our younger generation yourself.
It's the best feeling in the world to know that you got at least one.
We have Amber on the phone.
Yes.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Hi there. How are you today?
I am well, thank you. How are you, ladies?
We're good.
Good.
Aw. So tell me, Amber, how do you feel about the things that have been going on and the violence with our younger generation, you know, the shootings, knowing that these are their classmates, these are their generation that are going into their own schools and shooting other peers and adults and, you know, feeling like that's their only way out. What do you think about that? What do you say?
Well, you know, as a youth who grew up in North Portland, you know, I saw a lot of that, and then my son just recently, you know, graduated, moved on from high school, and he went to Reynolds, and we all know that Reynolds suffered a great tragedy, and it was hard to think that, you know, my son was, just how close it is to home, you know, and that these kiddos are, these young adults are out there troubled, and you know, and feeling like they have no other recourse than to take these, you know, horrible acts, you know, into their hands. And, you know, they're taking lives and taking their own lives. That young man, you know, shot a couple of people, including a student, a teacher, and then took his own life.
Right.
And, you know, I was at work in my own classroom, just up the street, and had to worry about, you know, my son's safety and just, you know, thinking about what I would do for my own students in my classroom and, you know, how I would obviously protect them with every ounce of my being. You know, I just have to back up and say that while I was listening to my wonderful niece talk about and Miss Beautiful Olivia talked about how just being heard and to listen to what your kids are saying to you, like, stop and have that patience. It's such a powerful message to hear from your kids. I'm like, they're telling us in the most plainest language possible, but who we're watching, our own children and our own people next to us, may not give us that same clear message. And what we all lose sight of, I think, as humans, is a simple act called empathy.
Absolutely.
And you know, if empathy, if you're not familiar, it's just putting yourself in that person's shoes. Literally thinking about how would I feel if I was in this situation,
right.
and then thus for applying it and you know, treating that person with respect and acceptance. You know, that is all that anybody wants, whether we're young or old. We want to know that we have a place here and that we're accepted and respected, and that it's okay for us to be us. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, our kids say things to us like, you know, it's about decoding their message. You know, they're not going to say to us flat out, I need help. And
right.
If they do, that's great. But if they don't, we need to see those signs.
Absolutely. It's the signs that go unseen that lead to situations like the ones that we've seen recently in the news and, you know, over the last few years. In fact, I'm going to have to go as far as to say this whole year, you know, it's been one long year when it comes to violence. And, you know, in my opinion, we're at a state of emergency with our younger generation.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be dying away here in a minute if we don't do something about it.
And it's all of our responsibility.
It is.
And, you know, I mean, I take responsibility for many children every day. I have, you know, 20 in my classroom. There's 20 in the classroom right next door to me. I have one or two in my own household. There's an old school saying that it takes a village to raise a child.
Mm-hmm.
And it really does. And, you know, we, as Americans, have developed this weird sense of, you know, it's not my business. It's not my kid. It's not my, you know, it's not my place. It absolutely is your place.
Mm-hmm.
This person is the next, you know, person who's going to be helping you later on in life. I don't know how many times I've ran into people, grandmothers are bringing their kids in, and I'm like, hi, I used to work for you, or I used to, you know, you're going to run into these people again in life, and that's what I'm saying. Like,
right.
These people, you might think, oh, you know, I'm never going to see them again in life. Yes, you are.
Yeah.
Yes, you are.
You just may.
It's your business.
Wonderful. Well, Amber, I'm going to have to let you go right now. It's time to take a break. I appreciate your calling and all of your excellent words and words of wisdom. I appreciate that.
Thank you, ladies. Have a great show. I'll be listening.
Okay, thank you, and we love you. This now is Adele, Rolling in the Deep.
Pitching is bringing me out the dark. Finally, I can see you crystal clear. Go ahead and sell me out, and I'll lay your ship bare. See, I'll leave with every piece of you. Don't underestimate the things that I will do. There's a fire starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch, and it's bringing me out the dark. The scars of your love remind me of
And we're back. That was Adele, Rolling in the Deep. So we've talked to our younger generation about how they feel about all the violence that's going on, and we've heard a few words from them. Now I want to talk a little bit about domestic violence situations. I myself have been in more than one relationship that was violent, the last one being the worst, in my opinion. However, you know, I pulled myself out of it. I don't call it a regret. I call it an experience and a life lesson. You know, I went through a lot of turmoil dealing with the man that I was dealing with. I wasn't able to have my children all at one time. You know, as far as physical, sexual, and emotional abuse, it happens. But I have a special guest that I'd like to introduce. Her name is Lisa Swart. She's a domestic violence advocate. We have her on the phone this evening. Are you there?
Hi. Yes, I am. How are you?
Hi. I'm okay. How are you tonight?
Great. I'm so happy to be part of the show.
And I am so happy that you are. We have in studio here my daughter, Marshalia, and my other daughter, Olivia. You know, me and you have talked a little bit, and I want you to tell a little bit of your story and why it's so important to you that we get these words out there. So can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what it is that brought you to want to be on the show tonight?
Well, the short version is I had a pretty idyllic life, and my husband was very abusive, but from the outside everything looked perfect. It was not. And he repeatedly threatened to kill both me and my children, and it was a very real threat. There are 11 murder-suicides every week in the United States. So this is a real threat when someone makes that. And long story short, I ended up killing him in an act of self-defense, going to prison for 12 years. And while I was in prison, I became a paralegal, kind of a jailhouse lawyer, and listened to the stories of all the women who came to me for help reading their legal papers, and realized what a pervasive problem this is. I was certainly not alone. And I became an advocate for domestic violence survivors, and that's why I'm here tonight.
Wonderful. When I spoke with you, we talked about this unique ability that me and you have, and it ties into what these young ladies were saying is, you know, we have this ability to look through the eyes of everybody in the situation, not just necessarily our own eyes. And not everybody has that ability, but me and you've talked a little bit about that. And we talked about the abuser, and tell the audience a little bit about what you had told me when it comes to getting help.
Well, and what you're referring to is the empathy factor.
Right.
And that's exactly really important, because if you just, it's so much easier to judge and blame than it is to help people. And so what I discovered in prison is that hurt people hurt people. And right now, there really is no place for abusers to turn to get help. There's no hotline. There's no preventative measures. If somebody's feeling really like lashing out, there isn't any place for them to turn. And what I've learned, too, is that prevention is a whole lot easier than dealing with the aftermath of just complete chaos. And so this is what I'm trying to address right now, is trying to help people who need help preventing violence.
Absolutely, and I totally get it. You know, and to some of the listeners out there, they might be like, what? You know, you went through that and you still have this empathy for these people, but, you know, but it's true, and everything you said is true. Hurt people do hurt people, and that's just, they have to make other people feel as bad or worse so that they can feel better. And there isn't any anything out there for them to reach out and get some help. And I would be more than interested in collaborating with you on starting something like that. That would be great. So
absolutely. Well, we've actually gotten underway a little project called Intercept Abuse, and we're trying to start a hotline. Our website is in progress. It's up, but we're working on it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, we'll have to talk about that more later, and then
absolutely,
you know, we can run with that. So I don't know if you were listening in the beginning of the show when these young ladies were talking, but, you know, domestic violence and everything that I'm talking about tonight, it all kind of ties in together. And, you know, you're a mother and I'm a mother. And as mothers, well, what could you say? What would you tell the younger generation when they do see things like that out there and they feel like, you know, maybe they're feeling the same way, they're sad or they're down and they don't feel like they have anywhere to turn? What would be something that you would say to them?
That people are not alone. And I think that's one of the biggest problems with our society right now is this sense of isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And not realizing how interconnected we truly are. And one of the girls, I can't remember which one, said that there are people you can turn to. They may not be your family of origin, but there are good people willing to help. And it's really difficult when you need that help and no one helps you. And oftentimes I think that's where abuse comes out of, too. It's people that have been really harmed,
mm-hmm.
and no one helped them when they're in that situation. So they lash out because, well, no one helped me, so I'm gonna,
right,
you know, and that, so
that's
yeah.
true. It is absolutely true.
There are resources, and it's hard to, when you're a kid, that doesn't make sense. It's like, okay, you can call a hotline or something like that. That may not even be in the realm of their understanding, that there are people that really do not want you to fall through the cracks. They
absolutely
really do want to help you.
You know, and for those young generation or really anybody, you know, sometimes it is easier to talk to a stranger, somebody you don't know who has no opinion about you or whoever it is that's in your life. So sometimes those hotlines can be good, and, you know, try. If you're feeling that way and you're feeling like you want to hurt yourself or somebody else, pick up that phone and call somebody before something happens. Fortunately for myself, my situations didn't go quite as far as yours did, Lisa, and I'm very sorry that had to happen to you. Nobody should have to experience any part of what you've had to deal with. And I commend you for the courage that you've had to speak out about it, and not only for the victims, but I really appreciate the fact that you can stand up and say, hey, look, you know, it's not just us victims. It is the abusers, and they need help too.
Mm-hmm.
Because without it, they're going to continue to do it, you know. So I really am glad that you were able to call in tonight. I'm so happy that you were able to talk to us. So, Marshalia, is there anything that you would like to ask Lisa? You weren't there on the conversation when we talked, but... and you haven't, my daughter hasn't experienced the domestic violence. I've worked hard I've worked very hard to keep violence as best as possible out of our home. But she's seen it. And so, you know, and Olivia has experienced domestic violence, in her home. And I'm going to go as far as to say with herself, what's something that you can say, Marshalia, to somebody out there who might feel like they want to do something bad? Or is there a question you would like to ask Lisa about it?
I think if I could say something to somebody is I would probably say you're not alone. And it's okay to feel however you're feeling. But don't end your life for it. Don't go that far. You know, there's always somebody, like you guys said, who's willing to listen. And yeah, just don't. I mean, there's always somebody, that one person who will love you and encourage you to do whatever it is that you want to do. And as far as questions for Lisa,
I can't lie. When I heard your story, Lisa, you became my hero. You did.
Well, thank you.
And I say that because, you know, it's scary. When you're in a situation like that, it's not as easy as just to walk out the door. And people look at you like, why don't you just leave? It's not that easy. It really isn't. And I know that. And you're my hero. You just, I mean, you took it to the next level where you're like, no, I'm done. I can't do this. And, you know, with that being said, that doesn't mean that it's okay for somebody to go out there and do that to somebody. What I mean is she's standing up for her rights. Yeah. She stood up for herself and she was like, look, you're not going to do this to my family, myself, my children. Yeah. I'm done. I'm done dealing with it. And, you know, I commend you and I'm right there with you. And, you know, I got your back in whatever situations you may need. You know, you got me in your pocket now.
So, well, I appreciate that.
I guess I do have one question for you, Lisa. How do your kids feel about, like, the whole situation, knowing that you were in prison? And yeah, how do they feel about that?
That's a good
question.
Well,
it was really hard for them because I was a very attached parent, and I was with them all the time, and then suddenly I was completely gone. Yeah. And my littlest one, it was his dad that I shot. And when he was about five, he was three when everything happened. So he came to visit me in prison and he said, why didn't they arrest my dad when he tried to kill us? Because then he would be in prison and you would be taking care of me. And why didn't that happen? Mm. And so out of the mouth of babes,
right.
And, you know, it's like, no kidding. That's logical. But you know, there wasn't the protection that there should have been. The law states that we have a right to safety, but it wasn't enforced. So, and now they're conflicted because they totally appreciate what I did because they lived it, but they also have to live with the stigma of having a parent that was in prison. They have the stigma of all the press about these types of situations. And, you know, so it hasn't been easy for them. No matter what, it was a difficult situation. And they recognized that, I mean, at the time, they knew exactly what was happening. Right. They were terrified. They were sleeping with knives under their beds, and, you know, they were terrified for their lives. But it was a really difficult thing to go through, and basically they resent the state for not upholding the laws.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And see, and that's another way it starts. Here we go, you know, a situation where two young children see it in their, what they would perceive as a bad situation, because, you know, kids are very simple in their way of thinking when they're young like that. So to them, that was a bad situation that wasn't being taken care of. And so mommy saved us, and now mommy's in trouble. And, you know, now that seed has been planted in their head against the government because they're not doing what they're supposed to do in the eyes of those two children. And
exactly.
It's, you know, it's horrible. Olivia, is there anything you'd like to ask? I know that you've lived through domestic violence situations. And so you, as being a younger adult, the next generation, is there any questions that you would have for Lisa?
Well, I definitely like how Marshalia asked about her children because, you know, I was a child, the oldest child, who, you know, witnessed it right in front of me, you know, tried to stop it myself. But I would say I really don't have a question. I just let all the children out there who were like your children and who were like me, who have witnessed it, try to get into it, just remember that you have to be safe, even though the people in front of you might not be, and you have to remember that you're your own person, you're your own heartbeat, and no matter what you're going through, it will be okay, and, you know, everything is, it's not your fault, and you have to realize that things happen, and sometimes they can't be explained, but that's what our parents are here for. And that's what understanding, you know, signs of different things and coping with them and trying to explain them the best ways you can. So
Lisa, before I go to break, to those women and men out there who are in the situation that we've been in, what are the words that you would tell them so that they would feel like maybe they could have a voice too?
Reach out, because there are people who will believe you, and that's one of the hardest things that I guess most victims go through, is that feeling of not being believed. And I really want to commend Olivia. Those were perfect words.
Thank you.
They really were. I mean, that is exactly right on what kids need to hear. You guys are awesome.
That's great. So, Lisa, I want to thank you again for coming on the air, and I would really like to get back in touch with you so we can collaborate. And, you know, it sounds like you and your family have grown to be quite strong over this, and I commend you once again. You are my hero for the week. I love Lisa this week. So
great.
We're going to go to break.
Definitely be in touch.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. So we're going to go ahead and go to break, and thank you for calling in. This is Tracy Chapman, Behind the Wall.
Loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me. It won't do no good to call the police. Always come late if they come at all. Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me. It won't do no good to call the police. Always come late if they come at all. And when they arrive, they say they can't interfere with domestic affairs between a man and his wife. And as they walk out the door, the tears well up in her eyes. Last night I heard the screaming, then a silence that chilled my soul. I prayed that I was dreaming when I saw the ambulance in the road. And the policeman said, I'm here to keep the peace. Will the crowd disperse? I think we all could use some sleep. Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me. It won't do no good to call the police. Always come late if they come at all.
Again, that was Tracy Chapman, Behind the Wall. So we've talked about, you know, we talked to Lisa and we heard Amber on the phone, and we've talked a little bit about how we've heard some voices of some younger adults, the younger generation, on how they feel about the violence going on in the world. You know, it is Halloween, and I have to say that with Halloween comes a lot of, you know, scaring people and things like that. And I want everybody to be safe out there. You know, I want to send a message out to the younger kids that, you know, ghosts and goblins and all the things that you'll see tomorrow night on Halloween, they're not real. They're costumes. Those are people under there. But I want you to know that there really are ghosts and goblins out there. So I want you to all be safe. So tell me, Olivia, do you got something to say? Because I think that it's about time for I Got Something to Say.
Yes.
Yes, I do. And with Halloween being tomorrow and me looking at different costumes today, I've just, me being Native American and growing up very close to my culture, I've noticed different costumes being titled as Native American Princess and, you know, just a basic old-fashioned regalia. And growing up, I've always thought, you know, that's super racist, you know, I'd never do that, it's so disrespectful. But, you know, me growing up and getting older and looking at both sides, I've noticed and questioned, we dress up as, you know, Caucasian princesses, Cinderella,
Snow White,
Mulan, and it's just like, you know, me looking at the costumes, I almost wanted to buy one, you know, because I love the style, and it's not, I almost felt like guilty because
You wanted to represent your own race?
Yeah, almost. It was, I didn't see it as a bad thing. And me, growing up with my culture, I didn't feel like it was super racist. But then again, I'm looking at both sides, and it's something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Something I have to say, so.
Absolutely. I saw a post on Facebook today about that very same mm-hmm. thing. And, you know, I was telling Olivia, I don't look at it as negative. I look at it as, you know, Pocahontas is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could have long, dark raven hair mm-hmm. like her and have tan, beautiful skin like her, I would love it.
Yes.
It would be beautiful. And I would love to look like Pocahontas. Right. So if I wanted to dress up like Pocahontas, it's because I love it, not because I want to, you know, be negative towards Native American culture.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was great that you can understand that as you got older. So what you got to say, Marshalia? I know you got something to say over there.
I do have something to say. So a lot lately I have been hearing how youth talk to their elders. And I know during our segment today, I was talking about how adults should stop and listen to what us teenagers and young adults are saying. But at the same time, we can't talk to our elders like we're crazy. You know, cuss and all that. That is one of my biggest pet peeves, I think, is when I hear especially children talk to their parents the way they talk to their parents. And I would use the term talking out the side of your neck. But just being disrespectful. I don't like it at all. And I think it's ugly. And that's something I have to say.
Yeah,
it's not okay.
To add to that, I also think it's a big part of a parent to watch their tone, especially their tone and what they say and how they say it mm-hmm. to their children is, I mean, it's a prime example of their parents on how they talk and react to them yep. and other people.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel the same way. It is that, you know, we can tell our kids anything
mm-hmm.
and it depends on how we say it as to whether or not they're going to believe us or how they're going to take it. You know, I can be forceful and they can be scared, or I can be gentle and they can understand. So, you know, I've always believed that once my child did something to get in trouble, I tell them what they did,
mm-hmm.
and then I explain to them, you know, what they could have done better the next time so that that doesn't happen again and they don't have to go through that again. And, you know, I'm not a perfect parent. I've made plenty of mistakes, but I'm happy with the way that my children have, you know, turned out as young adults. Although I still have a 13-year-old to grow up, although he's huge. But, you know, well, I got something to say.
You always got something to say.
I have a huge pet peeve, and it is the drivers here yes. in Portland. What is wrong with you guys?
Man,
can you yes. go, please? Green means go, okay? Mm-hmm. Green means go. If we all drive at the same rate, there shouldn't be any traffic like there was today. It was horrible. Horrible. That's why I don't drive, folks. I got road rage. Can't drive, got road rage.
Even in the passenger seat.
Even in the passenger seat. It's crazy. Yeah, so anyway, okay. Anybody else got anything to say real quick?
No.
There's always something that somebody got to say.
Right.
Something.
Absolutely. So folks out there, you know, there's lessons to be learned here for the adults and for the children. You know, like Marshalia said, it goes both ways. We as adults need to listen to our children and understand what it is that they're trying to tell us. And you know, that doesn't mean that you have to be their best friend in the world and do everything for them. Before I'm my child's friend, I am my child's parent.
Right.
And, you know, they know that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also understand because I was a kid. Now, with that being said, you children or young adults out there, you need to listen and to understand what it is that we're trying to say, because we have been there. We do know what it is that you're going through. And we are trying to show you whether it's going to be the positive path or the negative path. And you choose which one it is that you want to take. You know, so it kind of goes both ways. And my hope for the future is that more adults out there will have more of an understanding of relationships with the younger generation, as I do. You know, I understand it is hard for them. Yeah, they're kids, but kids have problems too,
right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if we start, you know, listening to each other more and talking more to each other like we're talking right now. You know, they may be kids, but they're not stupid.
Right. We're really smart.
And they understand. Smart. They know when you're lying. They know when you're telling the truth. People, stop lying to your kids.
Mm-hmm.
People, start listening. It's okay to be real with your children. Mm-hmm. It's okay to, you know, have an issue and talk it out instead of criticizing them.
Mm-hmm.
Or children out there, it's okay for you to come to your parent and tell your parent you have a problem instead of going out and doing something that you shouldn't be doing,
right,
you know, to try to deal with it. So, you know,
yeah,
we have a few minutes, and in these last few minutes, I want you guys to talk about how it is for you guys when you're in school and you see your friends. When you see your friends have situations, or you hear of situations, how is that for you guys? Because I know that even though you guys grew up in the same neighborhood, you guys had different ways of growing up. You know, you saw things that Marshalia didn't, but Marshalia's had friends that have dealt with the same thing. So what is it that you say to your friends, or do you say anything to them, you know, when you see them going through situations with their parents or other adults or even other young adults? You know, what is it? How do you deal with that? Do you tell them that there's places to go, or do you give them advice? Do you tell me what you do?
Well, I've always just kept an open mind for all the different type of students that were always in my school. I've always noticed that one troubled boy that always has problems, always getting kicked out of class. I've always kept an open mind, knowing there might be a problem at his home.
Mm-hmm.
Might be a problem with his little sister, pet, aunt, grandma. And I've always known that kids aren't bad.
No.
There's just something going on that's troubling them, and they don't know how to cope with it, maybe. And I've always known not to judge anyone. I've always known if I came and was given the opportunity to talk to these troubled children, or if I needed to because I saw them hurting so much, I had to say something. I've always let them know they're not alone, and it's okay what you're going through. And I've always let them know I'm a person that you could always come to for help.
That's what's up. I know you too, Marshalia. I've seen you in action.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I've helped with the help of my mom, try to help some of my friends out, give them resources, go and actually sit down with them and their parents and try and work some stuff out. But most of the time, a lot of my friends come to me, and I don't exactly know why. I kind of do. They can just be open and real with me, but in the same note, they don't like when I tell them the truth. And so sometimes the truth hurts and they don't like to hear it, and so they leave.
Well, if they were your friends, then they wouldn't have left.
Right. And yeah. I try and help them, and they come to me for help, but when I tell them how it is, it's like they're not ready or something. But like Olivia said, there's always somebody there, somebody to listen. And I mean, for those who are listening and know this is for you, like, I'm always here. My mm-hmm. doors are always open. My mom's door is always open. I'm only a phone call or away, if, you know, so. Yep.
Right on. You know, I love that you guys are here and that you guys can speak so openly.
I get it from you.
And articulate. You're very articulate, and I like that.
Thank you.
It shows that our I'm going to have to pat myself on the back for that when it comes to Marshalia, because, you know, I raised her, so just pat myself.
She raised me very well, that's for sure.
But, yeah, so, you know, everybody out there, if we could just, you know, just try a little bit harder, let's bring the rate of teen suicide down. Let's bring the rate of teen parents, you know, parenting down, and teen suicide, and, you know, domestic violence, and especially in our youth. We have, you know, a lot of young ladies and boys, but in my experience, a lot of young adults nowadays that are going through things that they should not have to go through. There's young ladies out there that have boyfriends, and they're at the sweet tender age of 17 or 18, and they're being punched in their face, and they're being thrown around, and they're being called names. And we as adults, it's our responsibility to see that and to take action. And maybe in the next 10 years, our rates will go down, and that would be a lovely thing to see. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. This one, like, line just keeps going off in my head from Tupac. Actually, he's one of my biggest role models right now. And he, in one of his songs, he says, "We need to change the way we live." And that means everything. How we love people, how we, just how we live, how we talk to people, everything. And I mean, I listen to his songs every morning when I wake up because they're so inspirational. And, mm-hmm. you know, he was so real and he told the truth. And we really just need to change the way we live and how we treat each other. And if we did, it would be, the world would be a little bit better each and every day.
Your face is just glowing.
You're describing that. Oh. I love Tupac, man. That's smart.
And she's right, you know, and it doesn't take much. You don't have to be rich. You don't have to have a whole bunch of, you know, materialistic things. You don't have to have children. You don't have to have animals. You don't have to have anything to make somebody's day a little bit brighter, to show them that, hey, I'm here, and if you got something to say, you can say it. You know, it doesn't take anything except an ear and a couple of words. And I don't think that there's anybody out there that can't do that in their own way. So, you know, let's do this, people. Let's get out there and show our younger generation that we're there for them and that we love them and we got their back. Yep. You know, you hear it here from our generation or our younger generation here in the studio. They're telling you from their own mouths, you know, hey, we need to hear this from you guys. And yeah, so is there anything else in closing? Is there anything else that you guys would like to say? No. Not Mary Rocks. Hey, I rock.
Yeah.
You guys just don't even know. I'm the best.
You are the best.
So, yeah. Only sometimes when I'm in a good mood. Just don't talk to me in the morning. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap on up here. I love all my fans out there for listening, and I appreciate you two being in here. And Del, thank you for engineering.
Absolutely.
You can like K-Boo, Bread and Roses on Facebook to get updates and behind-the-scenes photos. We're on Twitter at Bread and Roses Radio. You can find us on the web, www.kboo.fm/breadandroses, or email us at breadandrosescollective@gmail.com. Next week, Leanne will be your host. Tune in.
Yes. Thank you, Mary. And I would like to let you know that this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven cooperative striving to provide access to whole foods customers can trust. People's feature farm-direct organic produce, bulk foods, a weekly year-round farmers market, and everyone is welcome. Located on Southeast 21st and Tibet Street between Division and Powell's, more information at peoples.coop.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, are touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Marching, so many women dead. We cry through our city, their ancient call for bread. Our stomachs are empty, but our hearts are hungry too. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Thank you.
hearts too for men, for they're women's children, and we're mothers again. No more shall we labor from birth till life closes. Oh,
well, welcome to your Friday. My name is Mr. Hemi Blue Rhino sitting in with you. And it is a Friday edition of Hard Knock Radio coming up with Davey D and the boys. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM on your dial. So stay tuned for the Hard Knock Radio crew. They're coming up and enjoy your little weekend kickoff right here at KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Halloween Community Rally and the Spirit of Unity on Saturday, October 31st at Waterfront Park. In the Spirit of Unity will be a family-friendly rally to raise the minimum wage, defend